information, go to volunteeringwaikato.org.nz. Volunteering Waikato, enriching lives.
...98.1 Raglan Community Radio.
Now listen, y'all got your hoverboards and your fuzzy shoes. What the hell is a Yeezy?
And kia ora, good evening, Whangaroa and Raglan. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio here on your Whangaroa at 6:08. 8.5 minutes late, not too bad. Until about 7:30-ish. And let's see what the weather's doing and stuff like that to start with. So the weather is probably going to be fine. Slight possibility that it's not, and that we're actually going to have some rain, but probably not. Possibility of that through till probably late Wednesday afternoon. But not very likely and not very much. So there's one forecast that says, no, it's not going to rain. There's another one that says, maybe it will. I suppose I better say maybe it will to some extent, so limited extent. Temperature last time I looked was 21 degrees. The range over the next few days is rather warmer than this morning when it was 11, and 25 as a maximum, so not excessively hot, but quite warm, which fits in with that pressure. 1,018 hectopascals, and the virtually no wind. The still a southwest swell of 3 metres, though. And the next high tide will be 10:45 this evening, a 3 metre high tide, and a slightly higher one at 11:09 tomorrow morning. 3.2 metre high tide, 0.2 metres higher. The days, of course, still getting shorter, so we're now still losing a lot in the morning, not all that much in the evening. So we've now got 6:29 as a sunrise, and sunset, which we might even see. It's fairly clear this evening. So that should be 23 minutes to 9 this evening. Things which are on this week, we've got a few more things happening. So we've got the usual things which are happening. If you want to have a look at our website, raglanradio.com, have a look at the list of what's on. You can see a whole load of things happening every week, sometimes every day. But they're mostly listed there. Picking things out from there, we've got the Twilight football on Thursday. It's also happening tonight as well, but probably a bit late to go there tonight. But 6 o'clock Thursday for kids and beginners over at Papahua on the soccer fields there. So also happening on Thursday, there's music at the old school. I think it's sold out, but you never know. If you turn up, you might be able to spend $25 listening to Rennie Pearson's Celtic music at the old school on Stuart Street on Thursday evening from 7:30. If you can't get in there, there's probably room at the yard with Keita, who've got that music there. Friday, the yard's also got Reiki Ruawai, his music, The Message, and from 8 o'clock, the Harbourview Hotel on Friday has got AC/DC, charging $30 for that one. The what else have we got? Yeah, moving on to Saturday, there's, so that's beginning of February, 1st of February, there's Working Bee at Pause a While, the Animal Sanctuary at the beginning of Tuhutuwai Road at the Tumata end of it. So that's 9 o'clock on Saturday. Also on Saturday, an hour later, 10 o'clock, the club has a market on Bow Street. So that's 10 till 2. The films are being shown at the old school this weekend, so 5 o'clock. There's one called The Critic. As far as I can make out, it's about a newspaper critic who somebody doesn't like their review, and there's some pressure from the newspaper's owners to change what's going on, and it seems to evolve into something more than just about a music critic from there on. There seem to be all sorts of things shown on the trailer for it. I've read the reviews, I've watched the trailer, and I'm still somewhat confused about what it's about. But anyway, you might like to do the same and see if you can understand it better than I can, or even go along there. 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, touching your $16 for admission at the old school on Stewart Street. Then at 8 o'clock, they've got, 7:30, they've got a film about Lee, it's a film about a fashion model who became a reporter during the Second World War. So it's a transformation from one job to another. And on also on Saturday, AC/DC is on both Friday and Saturday at the Harbourview Hotel. So it's $20 for that one on Saturday, $30 on Friday. That's a tribute band on Saturday, so probably not the real thing. Where have we got to? Sunday. Crop Swap's on again on Sunday, on twice a month. So Crop Swap, 9:30 at the Bowling Club on Stewart Street. We seem to be having something of a drought developing, so I don't know how much there's going to be to swap at the moment. But, there's always quite a few crops which are most people managing to grow. Haven't really got into the depth of a drought yet, but there's the makings of it. And then 7 o'clock on Sunday evening, there's another film at the old school. This one about a lawyer called Rita, who has to help a Mexican cartel boss retire as a woman. Most of the films which are, or all three of the films, I think, which are being shown this weekend have a fair degree of violence in them. So I expect that with the Mexican cartel and the Second World War, and a critic who's being pressured by a newspaper owner and various other people to change what he's writing. If you don't like violence, it's a weekend not to watch the films. But if you do, it's a weekend to watch them. I think that's it for what I've got listed here. So I'll tell you more about what's happening next week. So moving back to look at what's been happening, not very much in the news this week either. Should probably apologise for last week. I didn't talk about the 1925 history, century ago, and I hadn't worked out what the pay rates were for postmasters and station managers, but I have now. So back in 1925, there was mention of a postmaster being paid £96 a year, which is equivalent to about $11,500 a year in current money. And mention of a station manager managing one of the stations at the back of the harbour, not railway station, but agricultural sheep station, cattle station. They were being paid £250 a year, quite a bit more than two and a half times what the postmaster was getting. So that would have been about £30,000 a year in current money. There's only a couple of stories that I've spotted, I think, this week seem to be shorter stories still. One, Radio New Zealand seems to keep covering things which I'm not spotting elsewhere. Last week they mentioned a bus crash at Whatawhata, and I couldn't find any mention of it anywhere else. And this week they're mentioning, again, a story which they've gotten, nobody else seems to have covered, which is an alleged sexual assault at Sandsplash under investigation. So this seems to be the only news about Sandsplash. It seems to have gone without much comment otherwise. But it says police were called to Sandsplash for an alleged sexual assault at about 3 a.m. on Sunday. The festival is one of a few to allow patrons under 18, and police say the victim is receiving support. A spokesperson for Sandsplash said the team was assisting police, but declined further comment. And there's also a video this time from the Waikato Times saying a woman has described an incredible experience after coming face-to-face with a pod of killer whales in Raglan on Friday afternoon. Jessica Gordon, who owns a local dental clinic, told Stuff that she knew the animals had been in the harbour all day, but had failed to spot them. She was on her lunch break at work, so decided to rent a kayak and go for a paddle with her friend Loretta. We spotted them approaching us after a 20-minute paddle. It wasn't scary at all. It was incredible. Gordon said one of the whales approached twice, nudging the kayak and swimming up against it playfully. There were five whales with a baby, and there was also a large male and three other medium-sized whales. They were majestic and beautiful, and it was a moment we will never forget, she said. And the other thing which been trying to keep up with the figures on COVID, because it hasn't gone away completely. There's still a couple of people in Waikato died of COVID or with COVID this week. And there were 72 cases reported across the Waikato, which is probably way under what the total is. But they don't seem to be keeping up with the numbers in hospital at the moment, so it's hard to know. That's probably the clearest indication of how it's going. 3 weeks ago, there were 11 people in hospital, but they've not updated the figures since then. So, as I say, keeping an eye on that. Let's have a look at, no, I think that covers all the things to look at. Let's go to, maybe we'll go to the bottom of the hour item since it's 20 past six, and then can just go straight through with the other things for 40 minutes or so. So let's have the half hour ad rotation 10 minutes early, and then I have been aiming to play the interviews that Aaron did with a couple of the early DJs talking about how the radio started back in 1994, so the 30th anniversary. But haven't managed to play them, two of them I haven't managed to play, so hoping to get those in today. And see what else we can manage to fit in as well. But anyway, bottom of the hour, 9 minutes early now.
Tune in to Raglan Community Radio, 98.1 FM, Fridays at midday for Faith Matters with Marie, for good music and real-life chat. Check us out on Facebook. Catch the podcast at raglanradio.com or tune in midday Fridays. Faith Matters, where it's just a matter of faith.
98.1 FM. Catch the waves.
That jingle's probably been with us for almost as long as some of the early people in the radio station. So one of the people who used to look after all the technical stuff before Aaron came along and seem to know how to do morning shows and sort out the problems with the broadcasting was Andy Fendel, and Aaron talked to him last year. So this is how that interview went.
On the line, I've got Andy Fendel, who was one of the original people involved with the station. Good morning, Andy.
Morning, Aaron.
So how early did you get involved with the station?
Well, it was right from the beginning, right from before broadcasting started. We've started having meetings at the Raglan Area School with, I think it was Bo Rewity. He was the principal at the time at Raglan yep. Area School. And somehow word went round if anyone was interested in starting a radio station to meet up at the school.
Okay, and you actually had, you worked in radio, or still kind of work in radio, don't you?
I originally worked for Radio New Zealand in Wellington for about 10 years in my 20s.
Okay. And were you ever on the air with Raglan Community Radio, because you did all the technical stuff?
Not much.
Not much.
I can we did do is at one stage there was a kids program on Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
And I used to take my three girls along, and the flatmate's son as well, and every other Sunday morning for a few weeks anyway, a few months.
Yeah.
And we put on the kids radio show with stories and songs and so on. So I tried not to talk. I tried to get the kids to do all the talking, which they did pretty well. So yeah. I can't really say I've done any talking.
Okay, this could be the most you've ever done.
You might have heard me in the background saying, "Come on, it's time to talk now."
Okay, yeah, that sort of thing. So you'd worked for Radio New Zealand. That must have been quite a contrast to Raglan Community Radio.
It helped me a lot in the sense that what I used to do was I was a what they call a studio operator, and for the first half of my time there, I used to sit beside the announcer and play the records in those days, and this was on national radio.
Yep.
Mostly playing the trailers and play the programs while the announcer just talked.
Okay.
So I learned how to completely operate a radio station aside from the talking, and then in the second half of my time there, I worked in the drama studio. Making radio plays and kids' programs.
Right.
And, so I learned all about, radio production and recording.
Okay, and you made a lot of quite a few of the ads, or probably maybe all of the ads, I don't know, at the start.
Yeah, when the radio station started going in the, about 94?
Yeah, 94.
That was when computers also started to take off, and I found that I was very happy to find that I could use a little program that I could download for free to edit sounds. Yeah, so I was able to carry on the thing I enjoyed doing, which was radio production.
Okay, and you made now I wanted to ask, I think you should be able to hear this. I'm just going to play one and if you can hear it. Well, that'll do. Anyway, did you make that one?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And how long has that one been playing at the station?
That would have been around about 96. I think I would have made that.
Okay. And do you remember who the singer was? Some people know, but I can never remember.
Is it Miriam Makeba?
Yeah, that sounds right.
South African singer. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of running all that kind of stuff now myself, but I feel nostalgic about the older ones, so I kind of leave them playing.
Yeah.
I think there was also, I want to ask you about this one.
98.1 FM. Catch the waves.
Yeah, so yeah, that one.
That was Des Baker.
He made that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was also made, well, probably a few months later, I think.
Okay, right.
Around about the same time.
Yeah, it's another one I feel a little bit nostalgic about. I can't bring myself to take it off. We have got lots of new ones as well, but, you know.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's good.
So from the technical side of things, how was the station equipped when it started, like when it first went to air? And
yeah, it just had a very simple little mixer, about a 6-channel mixer, I think. Turntable, there must have been a turntable, tape deck, and not much else, actually.
A couple of microphones, hopefully.
Yes, a couple of microphones, and I think we got a box anyway soon after to be able to put the telephone on the air.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember that thing.
But,
It was falling apart a bit by the time. Well, it wasn't falling apart, but the cable coming out of it was. I used to do long interviews about for an hour, and I'd be having to hold the cable the entire time.
So,
I remember.
Yeah, well, hopefully things work a little bit better now than they did.
Oh, yeah, things are very different. And so the station couldn't, when it started, I read that it couldn't even go on the air all day.
Oh, no, because somebody had to be there to play the music.
Right.
Originally there was no computer, and the way we used to play ads was using very short cassettes. So a cassette would have had about a minute of tape in it.
Yeah.
And we used to record the cassette, record the ad twice, and all the announcer had to do was let the cassette play to the end, and then it was queued up ready to play the next time.
So now it's automatic. Nobody has to do anything except press a button, and it tells you when to press it.
Yeah, right. What we did then was I found an old computer. And a program that would let me put buttons on the screen that would play ads. So the first system was after the cassette player was a screen with buttons on it, and each ad corresponded to a button, and there was a bit of coding involved in hooking up the music or the sound file to the button. But that was a huge improvement, but still, somebody had to be there to drive it.
So that was the first version of the radio machine that you made.
That's right. Yes.
Could you play music with it at that point?
No, you couldn't play music with it. It was just ads. So we had CD players, of course. That's right.
CDs. Yeah.
So we used to play. I probably had a couple of CD players. So yeah, that CD players were the main source of the music in those days.
Okay, when I arrived at the station, you developed that program to the point where people could play songs and there were MP3 files available to play?
Yeah, I think in about 2000 I talked the station into buying a computer and took on the job of writing a program to play music, MP3 files and ads, and I used a program or an application called Visual Basic to whip up a simple interface. But one of the great things about it is that once one song had finished, it could trigger the start of the next song. So that meant that the station could be automated and run when nobody was there.
Although I do believe there was a method of doing that before you made the program, which was a 10-disc CD changer.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember that. Yes. Now, when you finished your shift, you put on the CD changer, but it all it would do is play random tracks from 10 CDs, which were the favourite CDs, of course, of the announcer that had just left.
Yes.
Which used to get pretty tiring to listen to.
Oh, okay.
The same songs would come up time after time. And there w- w- there was no ads or trailers or anything.
Anything at all.
Yeah.
And something else I also read that you might be able to confirm, when it first started, like there was, I think it got a temporary license, and the station promised not to broadcast even over more than half the town. Am I pushing the memory a bit far here?
I don't recall that exactly, but okay. What did happen was 2002 or 3 or somewhere around there,
yeah,
we decided to, what was it, even 2005 might have been.
You're talking about the change of frequency.
We decided to try and get a more powerful transmitter and locate it where it is now up on the hill, because before that it was just on the roof of the
town hall here.
In fact, it was, on the roof of the town hall, that's right, which wasn't the best spot for a transmitter.
Sort of a bit of a valley, really.
Yeah, so we decided to relocate it up on the hill, and to do that we had to have a change of frequency. But we changed the frequency before we shifted the transmitter. And I got a phone call from a technician from Classic Hits who was quite upset, or their station manager was quite upset because one of their listeners could no longer receive Classic Hits. They could only get the Raglan Community Radio.
Because you were still broadcasting from the old spot.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So the station manager of Classic Hits was quite upset about this because it might have impacted on one of their surveys, which impacts on their income.
Right.
And so the technician was very concerned that we hurry up and move the transmitter.
But how long did that actually take? Because it's all done by volunteers.
That's right. Well, it was a few weeks later that we actually did manage to get the mast up on the or pole, might be a bit better description, the pole up on the hill.
Yeah.
And start broadcasting. So, but in the meantime, we were really upsetting Classic Hits.
Were you broadcasting with the new transmitter from down here? Like that was a bit more powerful.
Probably were, but we kept the we still kept the power down to what it was supposed to be originally.
Okay. Well, it makes me wonder, because every now and again, like, we still have the odd issue with the transmitter up there, and then I'm forced to put the backup transmitter on, but I haven't had any complaints about that, so hopefully it's all right.
Oh, well, that's good. Oh, I'm pleased to hear there is a backup transmitter.
Well, it's just the old one. It still sits here in the studio and winds away when you turn it on like it always did.
Oh, right. I remember. Yeah.
So do you remember, were there any particular shows or events on the air way back in the 90s that you remember? I'm trying to get, because I don't know the period of the station before 2000 at all.
So there was a handful of volunteer announcers who regularly did their shows. Chris Banks was one.
Yep.
What
sort of music did he play? Am I asking another difficult question? I should ask him.
Really? Yeah. Well, it was contemporary music at the time.
Yep.
Yeah, it was, and it was perhaps more harder edged than what you might have heard on the.
Yeah.
Some of the songs were a bit harder edged than you would have heard on the usual regular commercial radio, but.
Well, how did you like it being involved with a community station? It must have been completely different to national radio. Did you enjoy that?
Yes, I did. Actually, before I left national radio or Radio New Zealand, they started to do a producer started what was called Access Radio in Wellington.
Oh yeah,
and so that was involved community groups coming in and running a half hour or an hour show, much like the Hamilton Community Radio.
Yeah.
So I had a little bit of experience with that and working with volunteers.
Yeah.
So I was quite comfortable with working, and personally I was quite excited about the idea of being involved in a radio station again. So Yeah, so it was great for me. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and being part of a group in the community, in the Raglan community, that was doing something really positive for the, I felt anyway, positive for the community. There was a guy from BCNZ, or the engineering arm of Radio New Zealand, called Vern Talbot.
Yes, yeah.
Well, he was originally from there, and he gave us a lot of help.
He still does, Andy. He still does.
Getting up, and he's still involved. Oh, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, he's indispensable to me, in actual fact.
Is he? Oh, good. So you have a good close working relationship.
Yeah. No, Vern's one of those people who's never been obliged to help out the station, but has actually been hugely supportive over the years. He doesn't even live on this side of the divvy.
Yeah. No, he used to live at Whatawhata.
Yeah, he's still there. Yeah.
Still at Whatawhata. Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, it's handy for dropping off broken bits of equipment.
Right.
I thought that interview was going to carry on rather longer, but it stopped there. So anyway, that was Andy Fendall talking to Aaron about the technical issues with the radio back in the 1990s and up to the 2000s, which the first two-thirds of the radio's history. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. It's now just coming up to 7:20. Let's have a bit of music in the form of Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries, and then we'll listen to Kevin's recollections of the anniversary and how things were back in the 1990s on Raglan Community Radio. That was the Ride of the Valkyries from Wagner. It was written in the, from 1850 and first performed in 1870 in Munich. And, of course, Wagner was also one of Hitler's favourite musicians. So gained some notoriety during the Second World War and about that period, but it's quite a rousing piece of music. It's talking about the mythical creatures who used to be associated with the Rhine and various other things. So, yep, Ride of the Valkyries. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. We rang your finger off. It's now just gone 6:45. And one of the other people who was involved with the radio was Kevin Drever, who I've usually talked to about the Coast Guard, but Aaron talked to him about the start of the radio because Kevin was one of our DJs back in the start of the radio. So here's that other interview, which I've been hoping to play for a while and haven't had time to do it, but now we've got a holiday break, so time to do that now. It goes.
In the studio, I've got Kevin Drever, who you might have heard him talking about the Coast Guard, but he, in fact, was one of the original people involved with Raglan Community Radio. So good morning, Kevin.
Morning, Aaron. Good to be here.
Yeah, so you were involved right from the very start?
Yeah, I'd actually just moved down to Raglan that year, and I heard of this group that was trying to form a radio station. It was something I was interested in at the time because the as it is now, the music on commercial radio is full of ads, and it's just something I couldn't stand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we all got together and started the planning.
And was it a lot of work to get it started? Because you had to get an incorporated society going, you had to get permission from various ministries and raise money and get equipment.
Yeah, it was a little bit of work, but luckily Bo Rewardy, the principal at the school at the time, was right behind it. He was looking for it to be a resource for the school to use.
Right.
And so I think he probably put a bit of staff time into it as well.
Yeah.
Got his staff to do things. And we went from a loose group to basically a band of friends that were doing it, and we opened up on the 5th.
Okay. So do you think it would have started without him? Without Bo Rewardy, the principal at the time?
It probably would have eventually because it was something that a lot of people, especially musicians around town, were wanted to see was a local station and one that played local music and didn't contain all those ads. Because at that stage, reception over here wasn't that great for any radio station.
Right, right. Well, we do have ads these days.
But they're not between every song, are they?
No, they're not. I try not to make them like this sort of in-your-face, shouting at you type.
Yeah.
And it feels every now and again someone wants to advertise from out of town, and they've already got their ad made, and it sounds like one of those, and it really actually really jars with the rest of the station. Yeah. I try not to do it.
Yeah, well, I think we when we started getting advertising, we got one or two of those, but nothing major, and we would only do ads, I think, on the hour, and that was about it.
Right, yeah. So I just did the weather here, and it's all done using the internet and computers. But I mean, what did you have back in 1994? We did have computers existed then, you know. We all know that, but
yeah, we had
were they any use?
Herald for our news and weather, basically. I think there weren't many DJs that would worry about doing the news or the weather.
Yeah,
if they were. Someone rang up about the weather, they'd look outside and tell them what the weather was.
Yeah, it's raining.
Yeah. It's raining and it's pretty cold, so that's the way it was. We had a few surfers that were doing shows.
Yeah.
And they would elaborate a little bit more, but of course they wouldn't let too much information get out about the surf.
That's what I heard. Yeah, I remember discussions in the past that you'd get in trouble if you let out too much information, especially on the good days.
Yeah, but I guess they didn't realise is that the signal didn't get past the deviation if it even reached there at that stage.
Yeah, yeah. And now, like, I didn't start off doing the Surf Report on the morning show, but someone told me that it was on a website, and I thought, well, if it's on the blooming internet, the Daily Surf, then...
Yeah, you've got the Niwa cameras that are...
So. Yeah, it's all a bit of a giveaway, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no problems. So, I mean, you didn't have computers, did I read that the station wasn't even on the air all the time, to start with.
No, well, to start with, it was all just manual CDs and even records at that stage. We had...
Yeah, well, we've still got a record player.
Yeah. Oh, you have two, yeah.
Jeff Meek uses it, but I think he's the only one.
Does it play 78s?
Probably not.
Okay, we had a good collection of 78s at that stage too.
And right.
I think they're probably still around, and the lady that I actually got them from my parents, but I gave them to one of the local ladies, and I think she's still probably got them because she's a collector, basically. She's
okay.
Into that sort of music. Yeah. But anyway, we had a CD player. I think we had a twin CD player so we could actually line a second song up.
Fancy.
So you had to be there to actually play music.
Yeah, yeah.
Later on, we progressed to a 10-stack CD player, so we could set that up.
I think I found it under this floor here. You know, for listeners who don't know, there's kind of a stage that we're sitting on right here in the studio, and so there's a bit of room underneath it, and I was pulling out some old stuff the other day, and I think I might have found the 10 CD changer. Yeah,
that was a trick. The last person... of the day, or even between shows, because we didn't have DJs that followed one after the other. So the last person, if there was no one after them, they were to set that up and set it on repeat.
Yeah.
And more often than not, they'd set it up and forget to push the repeat button, so it would play through the 10 CDs and stop, so then we'd be left with white noise until the next guy came in.
Oh, right. So that would presumably happen about 3 in the morning quite often.
Yeah, it'd be about that, yeah. But during the day you'd get it too, because you'd have big gaps during the day between the morning show, say, and the evening show.
Right, right. So before that, if a DJ didn't turn up or something, there just wouldn't be anything on the air, I presume?
No.
Right, and were DJs as reliable back then as they've been at other times? Or did people feel a bit more urgency because the station wouldn't be on the air?
Because it was new, I think. There was a lot of people that were available.
Okay.
And especially because it was at the school, during the lunch hour, the students would do a show.
Yeah.
And after school, they'd fill in for a couple of hours.
Okay. So how did the town take to it? Like when the news was out that there was a at 96.6, you could hear Raglan Community Radio. Was it even called Raglan Community Radio?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, actually, I've still got one of the old – we used to have subscription cards.
Yes.
To raise funds, and I've still got one of the original ones, I think. But yeah, and the town was pretty supportive. All the local business people would give us prizes or whatever to give away.
Okay.
And the opening day was out here, where you were actually based out on the island outside here and broadcast from there.
Oh, we actually broadcast from downtown on Bow Street?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. When you say you broadcast, were the DJs here or they were up at the school and you had a speaker out there?
No, we had a the whole setup was down here, and somehow I think we must have organised a telephone line to the transmitter to transmit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's high-tech solutions.
Yeah.
We can do that now. With a smartphone, I can do that now. It's quite amazing the difference in technology.
Well, we have to organise telecom at that stage, I think it was, to do that hookup.
Right.
Because for that sort of thing, you'd have special clean lines, no crosstalk or anything.
Oh, right, like that. Mm, mm.
Now, I may have got it all wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it was for that. Yeah, I'm sure it is, yeah.
Okay, all right. And so you must have done a show. What was your show?
I did a few of the shows. I was Sunday mornings I used to do a regular show. I used to be locked into the little room beside the gym there while the Christian church was playing.
So Surfside, who there still use the gym now.
Yeah, they were there then.
And their stage was right, I've been in that hall, so their stage was right by the door to the little room that the station was in?
I'd have to be in there before 9 o'clock, and I'd be locked in until lunchtime, basically.
So
you couldn't play the music loud, and they basically work with headphones.
Well, they got music as well because they've got a band that plays.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'd hear that, obviously.
Yeah, and it would go through the microphone too if you were speaking. It'd be in the background. But that was all good. And but also I did basically the show you're doing, a breakfast show.
Okay.
For I forget when it was, but it was for quite a while.
Did you do it like every day of the week?
Yeah, 6 to 9, I think it was, yeah.
Really? Every day of the week?
Monday to Friday, yeah.
I get paid to do that. Well, not very much, but I do actually get paid. Like, you'd be in danger of burning yourself out doing a show that often.
Well, I was lucky because my job allowed me to do those hours, but and my lady did too. Sometimes she got a bit upset. But, yeah, no, at that stage it was fun.
Right.
Yeah. This so is something we decided we'd need a presence in the morning because that was the most popular time. And so I put my hand up and did it.
And you had the flexibility in your life to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's something else. So the whole thing was kicked off initially by the school principal, Bo Rewity, but he left within a few months, I think, of the station actually getting on the air.
No, he was...
Of the getting on the air point. Oh. I mean, he was there for the whole organisation.
Yeah. He did. He got a job, I think, with the Ministry of Education and moved away.
And what happened with the station after that?
Oh, it kept existing at the school. It was supported by some of the teachers. Some of the teachers used it as a resource, but I think most of them just had too much other work to do, and to bring this into the curriculum was something that was probably too hard.
Yeah.
And also, although the students supported it and wanted to be on there, at that stage we were getting a lot of gangster rap. And
this is the mid-90s.
Yeah.
So gangster rap was popular.
And we didn't have any regulation on what was played at that stage. So it was basically who could shock the most. And some of the town were quite shocked about it.
Okay, so they're getting to broadcast over town. They had speakers set up at the school too, in the school grounds, didn't they?
Yeah, over lunchtime, yeah, they'd run it through there.
I imagine they might have regretted that once the gangster rap started up.
Yeah, I think from memory they probably did cut it out after a while. My memory's a bit hazy on all that, but I know there was a lot of consternation about the content, yeah.
So that it kind of drifted away from being the school station to being a community station, but it actually stayed up at the school for a while, didn't it?
Yeah, and because it was at the school, I think it was seen by the rest of the community as a school thing, and so they left it to the school.
Right.
But then we where did we go from there? Down to the bottom of Bow Street where the cafe is down there, and... we were lucky enough to get a good deal on the rental there.
Okay.
To start with. It was a rising rate, basically, until we got established.
Mm. But that was, like, in 2000 or something, so you spent quite a few years at the school.
Yeah.
That's what I read. No, I've gone through and looked at the documents. So
it must have been before 2000.
Or 99.
I was still involved when we moved here. No, but when we were down there, I was still involved, and I became less involved in about 2000. When I joined Coast Guard, yeah.
Once it got downtown, did the town start to take more of a sense of ownership of the station?
It's hard to say. I didn't sort of. I know it's not nice, but I didn't really care about them. Didn't care. Well, I did in as much that we needed their support, but I didn't actively go out and say, "Are you listening to this?" I think we tried to do a few surveys. One of our members, Victoria Moore, I think, did a survey and found that there was a reasonable listenership out there.
Yeah.
And everyone you talked to would seem to support it, but I think it was very hard to gauge who was listening.
To do that, you've got to do those booklets that the commercial ones do, and you've got to find people who want to fill in as they go through the day when they've been listening to the radio.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, which is, people can't be bothered. And it was the station was off the air for a little while too, wasn't it, around the time of that shift?
Yeah, well, it was off the air while we shifted, of course. And then I think we did have trouble with the transmissions, a bit of interference. And my mind's a bit hazy on that, but I know we had to get someone out to sort out the aerials, basically, because the aerial gives you the can narrow the band of transmission.
Oh, was it splattering across the other radio stations?
Because it did interfere with, I think it was television.
Yeah, that can happen.
Yeah.
Apparently, I've heard of people complaining about things like that. So, but it was, I mean, it was here. We're sitting in the studio in the town hall here, where it ended up around 2001 or something like that, and it stayed ever since. And for most of that time, the aerial was transmitting just from the roof here.
Yeah, actually, I remember being involved in putting that up. Now I think about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's still there. We put a knee joint in it so we can tip it over. In a state of control rather than staggering around on the roof up there with trying to control the mast.
But that's just a UHF transmitter, isn't it, to go up to the...
Yeah, well, we've still got the old transmitter still hooks up there too, because if we have a power outage up the hill or something goes wrong, then we can broadcast from our backup here.
Yeah.
So they're probably the same transmitter that you were using is still sitting up there on a shelf behind me. What was your aim of joining when you started? Was it just you liked the idea of doing radio?
Well, I liked the idea of playing music and getting a whole range of people with a different range of music.
Yeah.
Rather than just hearing top 40 or whatever that we heard on the radio.
Yeah.
Radio stations at that stage would play all... They'd be focused on one type of music, basically. You'd have your...
As they still are.
Yeah. But... I just moved from Auckland, and in Auckland I listened to BFM a lot.
Right,
so
yeah.
That was the sort of station. And at that stage they weren't totally commercial either. They were financed by the student union, I think. And I thought, it's a fun way to do radio. It's a good way to do radio rather than have to make money out of it.
Yeah, which really distorts your focus, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it really makes all sorts of things. You've just got to do things a certain way. Are you surprised that the station's still here? Would you have? What were your hopes and expectations?
Well, the hope was that it would continue.
Yeah.
We almost fell apart. Must have been 2009 or 2008, the last year that I was president.
2009?
Well, whenever it was. You must
1999.
Oh, 1999, yeah. Right.
Yeah, I was just thinking 2009 was just a few years ago, so maybe 10 years earlier.
Yeah, no, it was then. And I basically had I'd had enough of being president.
Yeah.
But at our annual general meeting, which was just a small thing, I said, I'm not doing it anymore. Someone else will have to do it. And no one put their hand up. So at that stage, I put a motion to close it down.
Oh, right.
And... And then I think it was Jane Williams said she'd do it.
Right.
So it was a way, because I wanted to do other things. You know, I was going to join Coast Guard and go and do a bit of sailing or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had to force the issue.
Right, so that's how you do it. You threaten to close it down.
Yeah. Well, that's the way we did it then. I don't know whether it would work now. I doubt it would work now because you've got too many people involved, I think.
Well... I mean, you mentioned 2009. Sometime around there, it actually got to the point where we were sitting around the committee, maybe a bit after that, saying, "Well, we're going to have to do something different. Otherwise, it's the same. You know, it's the same people, the same volunteers holding it together, like you had for several years when it was up at the school. And you just get to the point where you kind of burned out on it.
Yeah.
And it was in that situation around then as well. 10 years later, and in the end, we decided to. Start. You have a paid employee who turned out to be me, and have this morning show on, and I'm better able to respond to people who want to do advertising, so we get better income, and you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that flows from that.
Originally, like after the first couple of years, we were trying to get funds to have a paid manager, station manager at that stage, but to get someone to organise that.
That's right. You've got it. Yeah, before you can get paid, there's a whole lot of work to be done to get to that point. Yeah, and you don't get paid for that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but
everyone else had other lives and other interests.
That's the thing. Yeah, yeah. And because it's an official thing, you have to have an incorporated society. You have to have meetings with minutes and AGMs, and yeah. pay attention to what the ministry says in the broadcasting rules. So it's easier on Tractor FM. Let's rock up and do what they want.
Yeah, well, that's a different law now, isn't it? You can throw those little stations on.
Yeah, general users radio license. You don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So, but you're only allowed to broadcast on 1 watt, which is a bit different. We've got 100 watts now.
Well, see, we only started with 20, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we're surviving anyway, and looks like we're going to last for a little while longer.
Well, I think
so
there's always
good.
New people coming into the community, and they'll have that interest.
Mm, yeah.
I've heard lots of different accents on the station over the years.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Visitors coming. We had just backpackers coming through that would do an occasional show every now and then.
Yeah, I had a guy here who did a really awesome full-on show for about 4 weeks, and then he was off. He even did a trailer and everything for his show.
Oh,
he
yeah.
was so excited about it, but then he was off again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We had a few of those, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look, thanks for coming in and sharing a few memories, and thanks for keeping the station going up until that point where it got downtown, and it actually took on, looking at the DJ rosters after that, it really took on a new lease of life, I think, once it got down here. Lots of people were really
yeah,
into
yeah.
it, enthusiastic,
yeah.
and scores of DJs back then. There was looked like there would be a waiting list at one point.
There was. We actually had a training officer as such.
Right.
Who was Andy.
Andy Findle.
Yeah, so, yeah, and he would take training sessions with new DJs. And they'd have to go through a bit of a test to see that they were up to scratch, able to use the equipment.
It's easier now because everything's done on a computer. There's not a lot of crossfading going on. The mixing
yeah.
desk hardly gets touched except for the interviews. Yeah.
You got it so easy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's so easy now. All right, Kevin, thanks for coming in.
Okay.
And we'll let you go now. And
okay, cheers, Aaron.
Good luck with the Coast Guard.
And so that's the second 30th anniversary interview. We can move off the 30th anniversary now, and I have a top of the hour because it's now 7 minutes past top of the hour, 7 minutes past seven, and you're listening to Raglan Talking Raglan on Raglan Community Radio.
Kia ora whaingaroa, this is your local captain Barlow of the Wahine Mui. Come and join us as we go around this beautiful whaingaroa harbour and learn all about the Raglan history. We also have bookings for private parties, memorial events and family reunions. We can do it all on the water. Also, you can just rock up to the wharf for a lunchtime or sunset cruise. We've got a licensed bar and snacks, and you can check out our schedule at raglanboatcharters.co.nz. So hope to see you guys soon. Kia ora.
BizWorks, chartered accountants, working for your business right here in Raglan. As well as helping us out at Raglan Community Radio, BizWorks has been offering business advice and services to the local community since 2001. They should be the first people you call if you've got a new business venture or want to grow your existing business. They can provide business support, take care of your GST, provide zero training, and of course, end-of-year financial statements and tax returns. So whatever your needs, the answer is right here in Raglan, just around the corner on Wallace Street. Call BizWorks on 825 7050 or go to bizworks.co.nz. That's bizworx.co.nz.
Ko te iwi Māori inganguru nei.
Yo! Oh! Awe ha!
Tai nui a whiro inganguru nei.
Yo! Oh! Awe ha!
Radio Whangaroa 98.1 FM.
Which is where you're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan at 9 minutes past seven. Got another 21 minutes, I thought. Might be interesting to, I'm not sure this will work actually, we'll see whether it will. Hope it will. My technological still's not great, but I think if I press play, then we can listen to Dame Marilyn Waring, the Raglan connection being that she used to be our MP back in the 1970s. She elected National MP as quite a young woman then, quite a bit older now. She was a fairly normal national MP to start with, and then she became aware of nuclear issues and brought down the Muldoon government on the his support for nuclear power. So since then, she seems to have moved even further away from national. And she was giving evidence to the Treaty Principles Bill submissions this morning. So I thought it might be interesting to listen. So hopefully this will work. Let's see if it does.
Take just a couple of moments to expand on the opening comments in my submission on equality and rights. So in the general policy statement, we're advised that the bill wishes to create a conception of each person's rights within our constitutional arrangements. Well, fundamental to our undergraduate studies in our university is to learn that different cultures have different concepts of ideas. So I don't really know, I've no idea what create a conception for all people might mean, but it's clear in Clause 6, Principle 3 of the bill, that formal equality means everybody gets treated according to the values of the dominant group in society, because that's always what formal equality has meant and does mean. But the meaning of equality is so highly contested that there's no universal agreement as to what it means. And this bill is based on the old approach, the pretense that everybody's born equal and that people can have the same treatment regardless of differences, and that's equality. Well, you might meet this approach to in a history of ideas course in an undergraduate philosophy course. That's where you find Aristotle and Plato. But thankfully, we've moved on from the formal equality conceit. Then there's this issue of concepts. Concepts are hugely varied in their meaning and interpretation, and they're subject to paradigm shifts. I've kind of had my breath taken away this morning and this afternoon listening to people, as if codifying something into law means that time stands still. One of the reasons we have the judiciary is to take account of the fact that Parliament never keeps up, and Parliament especially never keeps up when it's about people's rights. And the Minister this morning reiterated that the bill is his belief. Well, beliefs and concepts are what we call ontological and epistemological. Like, how do we know what we know? So they're constantly in motion. And what one man's ontology and epistemology mean to him is not a basis for constitutional change. In Clause 4 of the bill, there's no definition of the key terms equality and rights. So the bill appears to take for granted that equality and rights is the same old we are all born equal rubbish. So there are two key points to be made. Key features of the treaty are the rights of hapū and iwi Māori, that is, collective rights, referred to in Principle 2, but in Principle 3 is entirely singular. There is no space for class actions or collective rights. And the bill reiterates this singularity. Everyone is entitled to the equal protection, equal benefit of the law, equal enjoyment for individuals of the same fundamental rights. Well, protections and benefits and enjoyments are static words on a page. If you're interested in equality and rights, the foci are outcomes and results. So what should equal protection, benefit, enjoyment mean? Well, whatever Hobson's choice say, fortunately, Western democracies have embraced and recognised the practice of substantive equality. And substantive equality is not a concept. It's an analytical framework. Now, where a person or peoples have been subject to socially constructed, historic, systemic, and systematic accumulative disadvantage, equality cannot be achieved through equal treatment. And there can be no question but that iwi and hapū in Aotearoa have been subject to socially constructed, historic, systemic, and accumulative disadvantage. You address this through substantive equality, through equality of outcomes and equality of results. And for an earlier person this morning who wanted to know, where's substantive equality work? Well, it aims to change and transform discriminatory practices. There are plenty of examples of abuse in the European Union, the European Court of Justice, the Supreme Court of Canada, acting on their Bill of Rights, the South African Constitutional Court. Substantive equality is about redressing disadvantage. It's about addressing stigma, stereotyping, prejudice. It's about enhancing voice and participation, and about accommodating difference and achieving structural change. Substantive equality aims to change and transform systemic discriminatory practices. Equality is never achieved through equal treatment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to expand on my submission. There may be questions.
Thank you, Marilyn. We've got two questions to start with, first from Duncan Webb and then Ginny Anderson.
Kia ora, Professor Waring. Can I just say how much I enjoyed reading your submission? And you draw a direct line from your own family story, from the Tainui Wars to the present day, and then close by saying if we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it. One of my concerns in this discussion we're having is that people are looking at things in a very short time span. They think of, you know, the 1980s and beyond. And I guess I'm just inviting you to talk to that part of your submission and how where we are today is affected by, you know, where your family was 150 years ago.
Yeah, well, one set of my great-grandparents was married by Reverend Ashby, who was set up the mission station at Kotatehi, where Te Whereweru's pā was. So in four generations of my family have farmed and owned lands in Taupiri and Komakarau and then other parts of the Waikato. But the principal family farms were established because Waikato Tainui had to desert their lands and run south of the Pūnui River. And I've never forgotten that. And I had a message from my brother the other day, just saying, go, sis. And he was saying, you know, we've watched our family, our families, bear the fruits of decades of subsidies in farming and then the decades of profit from there not being a property speculation tax. And we watch how those generations have talked about that and they never want to remember. They never want to remember. Mm-hmm. That many people were murdered, exploited, disenfranchised, so that those families could be successful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Webb. Dr. Waring, we'll go. Ginny Anderson.
Thank you very much for submitting, and thank you again for your submission. We've heard today a lot about equality and the importance of equality and everyone having equal rights. I'm interested on your view of what happens when that version of equality negates someone's identity. What happens to New Zealand when that plays out?
Well, I think we go backwards in terms of, you know, the decades of some forms of progress that have been made in my lifetime. While I think one of the very best examples of the reasons for substantive equality are te iwi Māori, they're obviously the same for women, you know, for those with disabilities, for children who still substantially don't have a voice. If it wasn't for substantive equality, there are a whole range of legislation in New Zealand that simply would not have proceeded. I know it's only sort of one class of people, but matrimonial property, for example, the kinds of different health policies that must be made for women you know, be it whether it's around pregnancy, maternity, menstruation, a lifetime of submitting to superannuation schemes to then find you're still tens of thousands of dollars behind men because there was pay inequities. So we're surrounded by substantive equality and the challenges of it all the time. For those who are...
Sorry, Dr. Waring, I'm very sorry to interrupt, but that is the time for us allocated today. So can I just acknowledge your submission and thank you on behalf of the committee for being with us today. We do appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Right, so we're now going to invite Professor Jane Kelsey up to the table. Thank you, Jane. Thank you for being with us. I think you too are also familiar with the process, so I will invite you to present your submission for the next 10 minutes.
Kia ora. Thank you. Can I speak to you in two capacities? One is someone who spent over four decades as a legal academic and researcher on Tiriti o Waitangi policy, focusing in particular on areas of treaty principles, which included my PhD thesis, a number of books, and evidence to a significant number of Waitangi Tribunal hearings, including most recently the treaty principles. But my second capacity, and this kind of follows from what Marilyn Waring was saying, is as a Pākehā who in Aotearoa believes that we cannot cut ourselves adrift from the foundations on which we and our tūpuna were here. And in my case, like Marilyn, my mother's whānau come from a place called Sentry Hill in Taranaki. And I always used to teach my students what Sentry Hill actually was about and for. And so I think those personal stories are very important in us understanding the implications of what this bill tries to do. Secondly, I have also been asked to make a point to the tribunal that there are many, many people, especially many, many Māori, who have put together submissions on this bill, some of whom took flights down to Wellington with sheaths of submissions to get them in here when the website fell over, and who are expecting that their voices will be heard. And so I was asked to bring that before the committee. The committee itself, the bill itself and the explanatory note identify four objectives, and I have no particular problem with the objectives. One is greater certainty and clarity. A second is a more robust and widely understood conception of constitutional arrangements. The third is to build consensus around te tiriti and constitutional arrangements to create, to promote greater legitimacy and social cohesion. And fourthly, to promote a national conversation. What I do have a problem with is the provocative way in which that has been proceeded with through this bill that has caused very considerable harm. And I heard that especially during the Waitangi Tribunal hearings and subsequently to that. The proper place for that conversation is in the Constitutional Kaupapa Inquiry that is now underway in the Waitangi Tribunal. And I would invite the Parliament to endorse and the committee to endorse that as the appropriate forum in which to work out how we move forward. I have a different approach from a number of those who have made submissions, and it comes out of my many years of research, which is that I have a problem with the notion of treaty principles themselves. And I remember in 1990 at Waitangi, when Bishop Whakahuhi Virko said to Labour, "We do not need your principles. We have te tiriti." And my own research, especially in my very lengthy PhD thesis, looked at and traced through the construction of the notion of principles of the treaty in the 1980s, and which brought into the light what Ngā Tamatoa in their 1974 submission on the Treaty of Waitangi Bill said. You talk in this bill about treaty principles, but whose principles and who is going to define them? And so the research I did in the 1980s in particular showed how quite cynically the concept of the principles had been constructed. And there was reference earlier to the principles for Crown action on the treaty in 1989. I got leaked a whole series of documents whilst they were being constructed by those who were uncomfortable in doing it because they were basically asked to rewrite Te Tiriti o Waitangi through Crown principles. So to me, this Act Bill is a logical extension of those attempts to bypass the realities of what are in Te Tiriti o Waitangi and substitutes them with something that the Crown can be comfortable with. And in my submission, I quote, for example, Sir Robin Cook before the Lands case, saying the Treaty of Waitangi can't really pass muster as a document to take seriously today. And then describing his principles in the Lands case as being a subtle constitutional repositioning, which David Longy repeated in 1990 at the Commonwealth Law Conference in Auckland. And so we need to actually put aside this principles as a vehicle through which we have been avoiding having the constitutional conversation around Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Let me just make two further points. The issue about the referendum. It was extremely concerning in the Waitangi Tribunal to hear that the officials have been asked in parallel to this process to be working on implementation of a referendum approach on this bill. Now, we hear this bill is not going to proceed, but that doesn't mean a citizens-initiated referendum cannot be instituted and an attempt to have that at the time of the next election. And already the cogs are moving in that direction. That is a major problem. The second is that even if this bill fails, as we've been told it will, the Regulatory Standards Bill, promoted by the same minister in a manner that has been completely antithetical to what are supposedly best practice regulatory approaches, would effectively write Te Tiriti o Waitangi out of the priorities in the lawmaking processes. And so I think you will expect to find there is an equivalent move on that that occurs irrespective of what happens with this bill. And the coalition agreement, unlike this, which says taking this bill to select committee, although David Seymour's remit is and passing it, the regulatory standards bill is to be legislated. And so I invite the select committee to seriously consider the implications of that for Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Kia ora.
Thank you, Professor Kelsey. We've got two questions lined up. First from Duncan Webb, then Mario Meno Kapkini.
Kia ora, Professor, and thank you very much for that submission and all the work you've done. I'm interested in the discussion you had around, you know, your lack of enthusiasm for principles, full stop. And I guess the how we approach what the treaty means today and how we apply it to real world situations needs some tools, right? And I guess the principles might be a useful shorthand for those tools. But I'm interested in your comment and your thoughts on how we actually approach the kind of changing obligations under the treaty today due to changing social and wider circumstances if we don't have principles.
I don't understand why you need to have principles. You have very clear concepts from my understanding of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, and I've had the privilege of being tutored by people like Rob Cooper from Ngāti Hine in what that actually means. And if we look at the core value structures that underpin that, if we look at manaakitanga, if we look at whanaungatanga, if we look at kaitiakitanga, we can actually see in practice how that plays out.
And I think that plays out at 7:30. So if you're interested, go to the Parliament website and have a look for some more of those submissions that have been heard today. And, of course, the hearings are continuing, but Raglan Talking to Raglan isn't continuing. It finishes at 7:30, which we've just gone past. So if you have been, thanks for listening. If you haven't, hope you might manage to join me here on Raglan Community Radio here around your Whangaroa at 6 o'clock next, or 6-ish next Tuesday, through till 7:30-ish next Tuesday. And meanwhile, we've got some music lined up in the form of Throttle Moneymaker. So here goes.
Yeah. We used to glide, man, you know what I'm talking about?